What's up, everyone? It's Emmanuel, and you're listening to Crypto Testers, a new podcast focusing on consumer applications in the crypto industry. In this episode, I talked to Chris, who is the CEO of Osirium. Osirium works similar to a login with Facebook or login with Gmail, so users can seamlessly use the Ethereum wallet in any dApp and across multiple devices by just using an email and password while retaining full ownership of their funds. And that is not possible with existing Ethereum wallets, where people are most often bound to one device, and if they want to port their wallet to another device, they have to enter a seed phrase, which is obviously not the most seamless user experience. So it's a great wallet that has a lot of potential. They're backed by Coinbase Ventures and other notable investors. And in this episode, you'll learn everything there's to know about this great new wallet. But before, I want to thank Bitwala for sponsoring the podcast. Bitwala is Germany's crypto flagship company. They provide a European bank account with integrated Bitcoin and Ethereum wallets, which allow you to easily move your money between your crypto wallets and your bank account. They also provide you with a debit card that makes it even easier to spend your crypto in stores and online, basically anywhere where MasterCard cards are accepted. Another advantage of the bank account is that your euro deposits are protected up until 100,000 euros. So for those of you who want to manage all of their finances in one app, both fiat and crypto, Bitwala is the way to go. They even have a promo right now. If you live in the European Union and sign up before the 31st of May, you get 35 euros as a welcome gift. You just need to sign up using our special sign-up link, which I'll post in the podcast notes. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how's it going?
Very good, very good. Yeah, I'm excited to talk about Ethereum with you today. A couple of episodes ago, I had Argent here, but it was largely about UX in crypto. So yeah, really looking forward to talk more about Ethereum and smart contract wallets. And yeah, maybe let's start with an introduction of yourself and how you got to found Ethereum.
Sure. And thanks for having me on the show. Really excited to be here. So I got my start in crypto. I got introduced to it back in 2014, shortly after I graduated. And, you know, Ethereum was you know, not around or not launched yet and was still pretty new. And so I was looking at Bitcoin and, you know, people were starting to talk about these, you know, non-value use cases of Bitcoin. And I was really excited about that. They were talking about building land registries and that sort of thing on Bitcoin, but it was still really hard to build with Bitcoin. I've been a software developer and so, you know, I was trying to build stuff and it wasn't very easy. And then Ethereum came along and that was kind of like a light bulb moment that, you know, now you have this programmable blockchain, and you can build out all these other use cases. And then I didn't start working full-time in crypto until around 2016. I started like a small Ethereum development shop called Level K with a couple of friends out in Boston. And I also started the Boston Ethereum Developers Meetup. So that's kind of how we sourced our initial work. And then we ended up branching out from that and working with a lot of cool teams like Gnosis and Aragon. Then we got into auditing, which was a piece of the company that I championed. And we got a few audits and then we ended up auditing the Open Zeppelin framework. They really liked the work we did on that. So we started kind of subbing in on their team and auditing a lot of cool projects. And then, you know, we ended up touching a lot of the big projects in the space, including Augur and Decentraland and DYDX, Trust Token. And then I moved out to LA maybe 2 years ago or so. I met my current co-founders. They had previously worked at another startup together. I was hanging out with them just because they were a part of the kind of crypto scene in LA that I was new to. And then we started to see contract-based accounts start to develop. You know, Gnosis Safe was working on what they were working on. Alex Vanisan was starting to talk about universal login. And we saw it as this really exciting idea. And we're really, you know, frustrated with like the current user experience of Ethereum, and kind of saw this as an opportunity to use this kind of like new platform to change that. So last summer around June, we ended up spinning the auditing business out of Level K. We used that to kind of bootstrap ourselves because that was, you know, a good revenue generator. You know, we didn't see it as very scalable, but it allowed us to kind of fund ourselves while we were starting Ethereum. And then, you know, we ended up raising some money towards the end of last year, beginning of this year. And then we dropped the auditing business, and now we're completely focused on building Ethereum.
Yeah, I guess that gave you a lot of credibility, the auditing part of the business. So there's probably no one better to build a smart contract wallet than a company that has audited smart contract for a long time.
It was really great seeing all the different ways that like people, you know, structure their smart contracts and you know, test their smart contracts, and just seeing all the different systems gave us a good perspective.
Yeah, I can imagine. And so who are your investors?
So one confirmation letter around, but we also had Coinbase, Republic Labs, and Synapse Capital.
Awesome. Yeah. Before we dive into Ethereum specifically, I would like to talk quickly about Ethereum wallets in general, because Ethereum wallets are a bit special. It's not just like Bitcoin wallets where people just do simple transfers. In Ethereum, you have this concept of dApps. So applications where the back end of the app consists of Ethereum smart contracts, and the front end is basically a hosted interface, but anyone can deploy an interface to any smart contract. So you have all these dApps like Uniswap to swap tokens, or Compound, where you can deposit your money and earn interest on it. But to use these dApps, people need a special type of wallet. For a long time, the only wallet that you could use to use these dApps was MetaMask. Now there are, of course, more options, and Ethereum is one of them. We're going to talk more about it. But why do you need this special type of wallet?
Yeah, so I think, you know, what MetaMask was the first to solve was, you know, how do you use a private key with a website without exposing that key to the website? So with Ethereum, you need your key to basically sign and make transactions. And you don't want to expose that to the website, because that kind of defeats the purpose of what we're going for. You know, we want to have this trustless system. And if we just kind of give our key to every application we use, then we're trusting every application. And so what MetaMask was able to do was provide the sandbox. So they used a Chrome extension where the user could store their private key. And then the application could then, you know, request transactions from the Chrome extension. And then the Chrome extension could make the actual transactions. But the application, or, you know, the website, the dApp never actually sees the private key. So the user doesn't need to trust the dApp beyond the transaction that they're approving in the Chrome extension. So MetaMask was really the first to solve that. And then, you know, what we set out to build was more of like a Web2 style login solution. So we're kind of tackling kind of a different problem set where, you know, with MetaMask, the Chrome extension based wallets, you have this place where you can store the private key and access it. But for a login solution, you need to access that key across multiple devices. And so in the Web2 world, that's why we have servers, you know, with a database. And so you would just like store this data on a centralized database. And then your user can just kind of log in, you know, on any device and have their same, you know, data and all that stuff. But again, that kind of breaks what we're going for, you know, with Ethereum, because we want this trustless system and we want it to be, you know, allow the user to be their own custodian. Mm-hmm. And so with our approach, what we do is the key is generated on the browser, you know, the user's browser, and it's also encrypted in the browser with their password, along with what's called a salt. And then we store an encrypted backup of that private key on a server somewhere. And then that way, when the user logs in, they can always download this encrypted key store, but we can never access the user's funds because we are never able to decrypt this key store. We never see the user's password, so we can't actually access the funds. And so that is kind of the storage side of things. And then the other side of things is the sandbox. So with MetaMask, you have this Chrome extension that acts as a sandbox. And by sandbox, I mean it's kind of like a controlled environment where the website can't actually access what's going on inside. So for us, what we do instead of a Chrome extension, we sandbox everything in what's called an iframe. An iframe is basically like a mini website that runs within the website. And then that way, the user can download their encrypted key store, decrypt it, and use it within this iframe. And it's still in a sandbox environment from the dApp.
Gotcha. And how does that look from a user experience point of view? So how does someone use Ethereum in combination with a dApp like Compound?
So from a user experience perspective, it's very much like a Web2 login. So the user, you know, would hit login. We show a pop-up sort of like login, you know, if you're logging in with Google or something like that. The user types in their username and password. Their encrypted key store is either already in their browser or it gets downloaded, it gets decrypted. And then once they now have the key in the sandbox, now they can just start making transactions right in the dApp.
Okay, cool. So you log in with an email and password. It's super convenient. And then there are other options to like basically log in, right? Like two-factor authentication. What is that all about?
So we added a few kind of like Web 2.0 style security features as just like an extra layer of protection. So the main layer of protection is the encryption around the key store, but we still don't want to allow attackers to, you know, we don't want to expose users' key stores to attackers when we don't have to. So things like two-factor authentication basically allow just a second layer of protection for the user. When they, you know, might have more funds or want that extra security. So it works with two-factor authentication and also YubiKeys, which is kind of like a hardware thumb drive looking device.
Okay. So that's like an extra layer of protection. Okay. Yeah. So it sounds very much like a login solution, like login with Facebook or login with Gmail, but for the crypto world, right?
Exactly.
I guess it would be super important for you to have dApps that actually integrate Ethereum and list this option or log in with Ethereum. What's your strategy there?
Yeah, so you know, so far it's been very organic. You know, we found that the people are excited about what we're building and reach out. And this is a problem that the dApps face, is that their users struggle with onboarding with some of the current solutions. And so enabling their users to kind of land on their website and just sign up with the username and password and start using their application right away. We also sponsor, you know, some of the users' transactions, so they don't have to pay for their initial transactions. And so that really provides a better experience. And it, you know, we found it's something that the dApps really want and are willing to integrate.
Okay. Are they asking questions like how many users do you have to kind of assess if it's worthwhile for them to integrate you, or is it sort of a no brainer for them to do it?
Yeah, some have asked those questions. You know, some ask about funding and what if Ethereum stops existing and you know, I think they're all, you know, really great questions and make a lot of sense. You know, we do have a decent amount of runway. With our next version of Ethereum, we're also going to be releasing versions of our system that allow the user to kind of use Ethereum without touching any of the components that we run. So like, you know, it doesn't touch our backend or anything like that. And the user can just run it locally, access their account. And that way, you know, they can still access their funds if we just completely disappear. We are pretty new. So we launched back in February. So it's been a few months and, you know, we've seen a lot of growth since then. But, I think, you know, it should be a fun year kind of expanding and, you know, getting out of beta and starting to push harder on getting more integrations.
Yeah. You just mentioned this concern of like what would happen if Ethereum didn't exist anymore. That's a great point. So I log in with my email and password into Ethereum, and that decrypts my private key every time I interact with a dApp. Now, let's say Ethereum doesn't exist anymore. The server with the encrypted private key doesn't exist anymore. How, and let's say I wouldn't have done a backup, is there any way for the user to recover that private key from somewhere?
So if you didn't back anything up, or you know, like you do have to add like a recovery account or something like that, because we can't actually access the funds. And so it does like rely on you like creating some sort of backup. But there's some pretty easy ways to add these types of backups. And then we actually will, you know, show a banner and send you emails and nudging you until you do add this backup, because we want users to have this kind of security. And then right now, if we were to stop existing, you know, the main interface for Ethereum is the front end. And so today it would be a more of a manual process to kind of migrate your funds back to, you know, MetaMask or a different wallet. But what we plan on releasing is basically a front end that you can run and will be hosted on IPFS as well. And allows you just to import your encrypted key store, decrypt it with your password, and then you can, you know, fund your own relayer and just use Ethereum without touching any Ethereum services.
Okay. And the backup, is that, what are the options there? Is it just a seed phrase that people have to write down on a piece of paper, or how does it look like?
So we have several options. And so today there's two main options. So you can back up the seed phrase, or you can add an account, and that account could be like a ledger. It could be your MetaMask account. It could be, you know, an account that belongs to some other seed phrase that you have. There's no restrictions on it. And then we're also adding a new recovery feature that's going to come out in a few months. And that's going to allow you to add recovery accounts that are on a time delay. And then that way you can add, say your friends or something, you know, we'll even provide our own recovery service, where, you know, you can allow us to recover your account on a time delay. But if you still do have access to your account, you can always cancel that recovery process. So it doesn't allow us to just access your funds. It's just kind of like a safety measure. And the reason that we've done that is because new users coming on, they create their username and password. We don't want to ask them to like set up recovery, you know, immediately before they have any value in their account. So this is kind of like this bridge option where, you know, they can use this service. It's still non-custodial, but then once they're ready, and you know, again, we're sending them emails, we're showing a banner, and once they're ready, they can set up their own recovery process and have it be something that's more like custom to their needs.
Yeah, and when you're saying they can ask some friends to recover their wallet, how would that look like? Like the friend would need to have an Ethereum wallet, or is it something else?
Yeah, so initially it's going to just allow for the user to add their own addresses and stuff. So we haven't thought a lot about the user experience of adding someone else, but it will probably look something like you send them, or you get their address, you add it to as a recovery address for your account, and then in the case where you lose access to your account, you can send them a link to trigger the recovery process. And then they, on their side, they would use the wallet that you've added as a recovery account, and then they can trigger the recovery process for you. Gotcha. And then after the time delay, it gets completed.
So they would need to sign the recovery with the private key of the wallet that I have kind of submitted as a guardian or as a, yeah, recovery wallet.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. One question that I keep thinking about when I think about wallets like Ethereum that I like to label cross-device login solutions. There are others that take similar approaches like Toros or Fortmatic. I keep wondering, is it the main focus to, you know, provide this seamless login solution and kind of let users interact with, you know, the features that are in dApps, or do you want to also integrate some dApps natively into the Ethereum interface?
So the main goal that we're going after is definitely dApp interaction. So allowing users to log into dApps and use the dApps with that interface. And that interface might not be just web-based, but it could also be something like a native app or a desktop app that you're running on your computer. And so that's kind of what we see as the scalable approach. So, as we see more and more dApps emerge, it makes a lot more sense in our eyes to just allow the user to log in and use those applications. But that being said, there may be some stuff that it makes sense to just integrate directly into the wallet. And that might not take, the shape that you would imagine. So like one of the things that we're thinking about, actually, let me take a step back. So, Ethereum uses a contract-based account. And so a contract-based account unlocks a lot of functionality that you can't do with a normal account. And most accounts that you see today are just normal accounts. And one of those big features is batch transactions. So with batch transactions, we can, a normal account has this limitation where it can only make a transaction directly with a single address, so a single contract or a single person. But with a contract-based account, you can interact with multiple contracts within one single transaction. And so we implemented batch transactions. There's a few dApps out there using it, like 1inch is using it. And the most common use case that you see is just to eliminate the need to kind of approve a token before you use a dApp. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of other stuff that we can do with batch transactions. So one feature that we're working on is we call it token abstraction. And so this is, if you have one token and you need another token, so say you're on OpenSea and you're trying to buy this NFT for, say 5DAI, but you only have ETH in your wallet. What we can do is abstract away the token that you need and just allow you to purchase that token that NFT with ETH. And the way we would do that is we would batch in a transaction where it would use some exchange protocol. So like say Uniswap to swap your ETH for DAI, and then it would make the purchase all within one transaction. And so that's one way that we might use, or start using like these different protocols or dApps directly in the wallet. But it's not like we're exposing like a whole exchange interface in Ethereum.
Gotcha. So just like shortcuts, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, cool. Today, people can buy crypto also through your interface. So you have fiat on-ramps, I guess, in the US. And recently, you also added Ramp Network, so a fiat on-ramp for European users. But yeah, can you walk us through the other features that you have? Because there's a lot of awesome stuff also in there.
Yeah, definitely. When we started Ethereum, we were really focused on, onboarding UX. It was always about like general UX as well, but onboarding was kind of the big pain point that we saw. And, for onboarding, the biggest problems we saw were one, the user having to download something. So we talked about that. The user having to back up a seed phrase. So we talked about that with, kind of these novel recovery methods. And then the third one was actually getting crypto to use. And so we've taken two approaches to this third onboarding problem. So one is the sponsored transactions. So with the sponsored transactions, we actually are willing to, pay for some of the user's initial transactions to kind of allow them to get onboarded and start using a dApp. So maybe they're playing a game. They can claim a pack of NFTs and start actually playing the game and get some value out of that application before they're asked to, go through a KYC process with an exchange or something like that. But then once the user is ready to get their own crypto and start using it in these applications, if we are sending them to an exchange or something, it often requires this like long process. You have to like show, all of your information, like your tax ID, your passport, and then wait for multiple days for that information to clear. And so it's just a really, really painful, like full of friction experience. And that's what some of these fiat on-ramps have solved. So like Wire and Ramp, they've made it really easy just to, take a credit card or a bank account and get crypto right away so you can start using an application. And that's why it's so important to us. And that's why we've, you know, integrated those directly into Authereum.
And so you mentioned you're kind of taking the fees on yourself for new users. And I think that makes total sense, like makes it way easier for people who use Ethereum for the first time to just get started. How is that implemented? Are you just like covering a set amount of transactions, or is it something that you'll implement later? At the moment you cover everything. How does it look like?
Yeah, so when we started, we actually covered everything, and we knew that we would have to introduce restrictions, but we weren't sure where, because we didn't have any real world data on how users would use this, and where it would make sense to cover and where it would not. So we launched and we covered everything, and then we started to look at look at all of the data on chain and see how much these users' transactions were costing and the different user behaviors. And then I explained the reason that the free transactions are important to us. So it's that kind of use case with the initial user that we're focused on. What we wanted to do was cut off this like long tail of users that use like a lot of transactions, because that was really expensive. So that kind of user profile was like, people that are day trading. Someone came on and ran an airdrop on Ethereum and stuff that was obviously unsustainable, but was like really interesting from our perspective to see how people were using it. And then there was this other user type that was just, really, really heavy transactions. And so a good example of a dApp that just uses a lot of gas is a DEX aggregator. And so a DEX aggregator will take your trade and then split it up amongst many different decentralized exchanges to kind of get you the best price, because then you don't have as much slippage on each of the exchanges, but it ends up costing a ton of gas. And so what we saw was, we saw users that started to move over and they were more interested in just trading and stuff and wanted to, get their gas costs covered because, these DEX aggregators were so expensive. And that also was unsustainable. So the restrictions we ended up introducing were users get 10 free transactions a week. Those transactions can use up to 750,000 gas, which will cover the vast majority of regular Ethereum transactions. So as long as you're not like making a big contract or using a DEX aggregator or something, you're likely going to be covered, including like a Uniswap swap or something like that. And then in that way, we can keep this like nice onboarding experience with the free transactions, but then also keep it sustainable, where once we do introduce a business model, we'll be able to cover the cost of this nice onboarding experience with our business model.
Mm-hmm. Can you explain how this works, like covering the transaction cost of users? It's quite an awesome feature. There are like one or two other wallets, I think, that have implemented it, but it's quite a new thing. Can you explain how it works?
Sure. So the root of it is it's built on what's called the meta transaction. And so with a contract-based account, instead of just having like one key that holds all the funds and just has this like really binary, all or nothing access to the funds, all your funds are held in a smart contract. And then you have many keys that kind of control this smart contract, but don't hold any funds. Mm-hmm. And so with Ethereum, we can generate keys for the wallet off chain. This is some novel key mechanism that we came up with and implemented. And so every single dApp that the user uses on every single device has its own key. So there's like tons of keys for a user that's using a lot of dApps. But because none of these keys actually have any ETH in them, they can't make any transactions because they can't pay for the gas. So the way you get around that is through what's called a meta transaction. And so the key just signs the transaction data, passes that transaction data off to what's called a relayer. And then the relayer is just this process that runs on a server, and it just like waits for signed transaction data. And once it gets it, it turns that into an actual Ethereum transaction and pays for the gas. And that's how the transaction gets on chain. And then the relayer is making a transaction to the user's account. And the relayer can choose to either take a refund from the user or not take a refund. And so the you know, they either have the user pay for the transaction or cover the transaction. And in that way, we can basically sponsor transactions. But the other cool thing that you get with meta transactions is that in the case where the user is refunding the relayer, they don't have to refund the relayer in ETH. They could refund the relayer in any token that the relayer is willing to accept. So it could be like a stable token like DAI. And so now the user, even when they're paying for their own transactions, doesn't necessarily need to have ETH in their wallet. And that also like opens up a lot of doors and makes things a lot easier on the user, because if they were on an application where they need to DAI, you know, in with a regular account, they would, you know, need to get not only DAI, but they would also need to get ETH. With this approach, all they need is DAI.
Right. And because when you need ETH to pay, let's say you're on Uniswap, you want to make a trade, you don't have ETH, you're kind of in a vicious cycle, because you want to buy then ETH, but you don't have ETH to pay for the transaction cost of that transaction. So you actually need to go to an exchange, like a centralized exchange, to buy ETH in that case and withdraw that ETH to your wallet. And only then you can do anything again. So it's really cool, this concept of, what's it called again? Gas abstraction, or that you can basically pay gas costs in any token?
Just a meta transaction, yeah.
Meta transaction, yeah.
So really quickly, but there's two ways to do meta transactions. And so with just like a regular account and a regular dApp, you can't do meta transactions. So that's like a big limitation. And so in order to do meta transactions, you either have to have a contract-based account, or the dApp has to specifically support meta transactions. And even when the dApp supports meta transactions, it's still fairly limited, because say the user needs to do an approval or something like that, where they approve an ERC-20 token for the dApp to use. The dApp can't implement meta transactions for the token, so the user still needs ETH to do that approval. So that's kind of one of the reasons that we're really excited about contract-based accounts, is because we're really excited about meta transactions, and we see this as like the best possible implementation of meta transactions.
How does it work? So you have your own relayer, because I also know that there, for example, Reddit recently announced their own Reddit wallet, and they also said they would cover the gas costs of their users, but they plugged into an existing network of relayers, which I think is called the Gas Station Network. Are you using the same thing, or are you building your own relayer?
So we built our own relayer, and then we're also in this like kind of version of Ethereum that doesn't touch any of our services, including the relayer. We're going to let the user run their own relayer. And the reason that we've chosen to run our own relayer rather than using a network as of now is because we have tied these like Web2 security features into our relayer. And so the user, when they log into a dApp, they create this new key. And that key can have these like extra restrictions. And the user can always bypass those extra restrictions, because they always have access to their main key, and that has full control. But when they're just logging in as normal, they can scope this key that they're using with the application to only use our relayer. And then in our relayer, we can add these security features that you would see in, you know, like a crypto exchange or something like that, where, you know, they're looking at the browser fingerprint and the context that the user should be operating from. Mm-hmm. And if they see any odd behavior, they can then ask for some like second form of confirmation. So like ask the user to confirm their email or something like that. And that's to prevent like stolen credentials and something like that.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that can be prevented is if a dApp were to be compromised. So say some DeFi dApp is compromised, and users that visit the DeFi dApp are getting their funds stolen. What we can do in the relayer is just kind of blacklist that dApp and stop relaying transactions to it and protect users' funds. But it's still not a point of censorship, because the user can always bypass our relayer and just use the dApp themselves by either, you know, running their own relayer or just not scoping their key to have to use our relayer.
Running their own relayer, would that be a complicated thing to do? Or can they also plug into a relayer of someone else? Like imagine there would be another business popping up that would offer a relayer as a service, and could an Ethereum user then choose to use that relayer?
I think so. Today, running their own relayer would be fairly complicated. Once we release this version that they can kind of run on their own, it should be really easy. It should just be a matter of funding it with some ETH. And they could choose to use third-party Relayer. Like, it would be possible to enable that. We plan on running our Relayer just at cost, and the user also gets these, you know, nice security features. So there's not a big advantage that a third party would bring, but, you know, it might be something that we enable in the future.
Gotcha. Okay. Maybe to finish, what is Ethereum's focus at the moment? Yeah, you launched a couple of months ago, I guess. What has happened since then, and what are you planning for the future?
Yeah, so, you know, we've been just iterating. You know, we're still in beta, and I've been getting feedback from dApps. We've been getting feedback from users, and just trying to polish the product as much as possible. We also have a few audits in flight. So we're going to get all the off-chain systems audited by a group called Cure53. So it's the same group that audited MetaMask and MyCrypto. And then we're also getting a second smart contract audit by a group called G0. And so they audited Argent smart contracts and Gnosis Safe smart contracts, both of which, you know, share a lot of similarities with ours. So, you know, we see them as a really, really great fit, a ton of domain knowledge, and you know, should be great auditors for our smart contracts. And then we're also working on a V2 of Ethereum. And so, you know, in the next few months, we're going to, you know, release these audits, the new version of Ethereum, come out of beta, and it should be a pretty nice polished experience that, you know, we're really excited to get out there.
I think I also heard once that you're working on a mobile app. Is that something for the near future or more long term?
The mobile app is a little more long term, but something that we are thinking about in the more near future is releasing a React Native SDK that will allow dApps to build their own native apps and allow users to just log in with Ethereum on that native app and use it just like they were any other app on their phone.
That's super cool. Awesome. Yeah, that was really interesting. Some great insights. I wish you the best of luck.
Thanks, Emmanuel. It was great being on the show. And yeah, always great talking.